Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Almost one in four students say they've been bullied, according to a 2015 study by the U.S. Department of Education. Native American students are not immune to bullying. One study suggests they have a higher risk because of contributing factors like being economically challenged. What does it take to stop a bully from making school or social media unbearable? Join us for this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama says his administration is closely monitoring the Dakota Access Pipeline and suggests they're exploring if it could be rerouted. Obama made the comments on Now This Media after being asked if it's something he would consider intervening in. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe continues to oppose the pipeline, and supporters continue to camp and demonstrate in North Dakota. Obama added the administration is going to let it play out for several more weeks to determine if there can be resolution attentive to First Americans. A deal between a coalition of tribes and the Bureau of Reclamation aims to address concerns over drought and water levels in the nation's largest reservoir. KAWC's Stephanie Sanchez reports.
The Colorado River Indian tribes, also known as CRIT, have approved an agreement with the Bureau of Reclamation to fallow land on its reservation and make the conserved water available for storage in Lake Mead. The lake is the nation's largest reservoir, and water levels are at their lowest in decades. CRIT Tribal Chairman Dennis Patch.
The state of Arizona is in great need of water, so if we're able to fix our system and allow us to irrigate what lands we have now, and with the conservation methods that will give us more water to make a water deal in the state to help the state and overall the region.
The tribes will receive payments to fallow more than 1,500 acres for 1 year. That amounts to approximately 2% of the currently irrigated land and about 1% of the irrigable acreage on the reservation. Patch says the tribes received about $1.5 million from the deal and hope to continue with the program for another year.
Tribes have to recognize what the water is worth in the Southwest, and we've tried to do is look at benefits of the water to other entities like the Southern California, Central Phoenix, Tucson area.
Patch notes tribes have first rights to water in the Colorado River and were not at risk from reduced water levels in Lake Mead. I'm Stephanie Sanchez.
The St. Regis Mohawk Tribe in New York is updating rules to give an edge to Native-owned businesses. Tribal officials say the move will help the reservation grow its economy. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
Native businesses based on reservations struggle to get capital and loans. That's because banks often won't recognize collateral on sovereign territory. The St. Regis Mohawk Tribe is trying to help overcome that disadvantage by giving Native-owned firms a boost when bidding for contracts.
These kind of preferential policies encourage more business development.
Chris Thompson is the tribe's economic development director.
One thing we're really proud of in Akwesasne is that we have quite a few businesses, and so we have a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, and so we want to encourage that growth in different industries, if you will.
Thompson says the tribe already had a preference policy for Mohawk vendors, but there weren't enough successful bidders. So the tribe upped the preference and made it available to all Native-owned businesses. A Mohawk firm recently won a contract to fix the lights at an outdoor arena. Thompson says the tribe also gave the company a bridge loan to get the work started. He says that's a win for growing a buy local economy in Akwesasne. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
One of the first sportscasters to take a stand against Native American nicknames has died. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
Bob Laskowski's stand against the Washington team nickname was formed through a chance meeting in a South Dakota restaurant. The former publisher of the Lakota Times newspaper, Tim Gallego, wrote a column about spending an hour visiting with Laskowski about the use of Indian nicknames. Laskowski later decided he would not use the term Redskins on the air anymore. He referred to them as the NFL team from Washington. Laskowski's good friend, fellow South Dakota sportscaster Mike Henriksen, had not heard that story.
That would not surprise me in the least. It makes wonderful sense, and if indeed that is the case, good for him.
Laskowski was a sportscaster on radio and television for four decades. He died over the weekend at age 73. I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
As an American Indian or Alaska Native, you help elders, young people, and Native businesses when you exercise your right to vote. Your vote makes a difference in Washington and at home. More information at nativenews.net, brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. VisionMaker Media celebrates 40 years by streaming 40 films in 40 weeks. More information, including titles and dates, can be found at visionmakermedia.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. There are many things that can erode a person's connection to their community, including bullying. Some tribal organizations are working diligently to make sure young people are living healthy and without the pains of bullying. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration links bullying to anxiety, depression, and loneliness. The Centers for Disease Control links bullying to an increase in suicidal behaviors. A 2013 study in the Journal of Indigenous Research mentioned factors for young Native Americans that might put them at higher risk of being bullied. They include poverty, unstable family structures, and stereotypes and misconceptions from the larger society. So today, with all that, we ask, what can parents do to address bullying in their children's lives? And what role do teachers and school administrators play in all of this? Those are some of the questions we want to get to in this hour. And you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And later in the hour, we also hope to take a look at how bullying can trickle into an adult's life. If there's something you'd like to say about this side of bullying, stay tuned. Let's go ahead and meet our first guest. We're going to say hello to our guest joining us from Cattaraugus Territory in New York. Let's say hello to Leslie Logan. She's a private PR consultant and freelance writer, and she is Seneca. It's our pleasure to have her here back with us again. Leslie, welcome to the hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Leslie, this topic today connects to you in different ways and definitely through a personal experience. Leslie, let's start things with just giving folks an understanding of how deep bullying can go and just what it does to a person, a family, and maybe even their connection to their community. Leslie, please share with us why this topic is important to you and how you and your family have faced it.
Well, gosh, it's heartbreaking when you see your child just going through the ringer and getting torn down and coming home, you know, after repeat incidences of girls or other kids just, you know, banging up and being mean and saying terrible things. And it's vicious and it goes on and you can't stop it. And for me personally, there were a number of incidences. And, you know, when you see things going on between kids and friends, frankly, you think, okay, well, you know, you want to let it go. You want them to work it out. And I certainly didn't want to be one of those intervening whack job moms, you know, where you're jumping in all the time and, you know, trying to make things right. You want your kids to be able to resolve things. And, so I let it go and let it go until I couldn't let it go any further.
And Leslie, as you were seeing a lot of this unfold, when did you know it was time to intervene as a parent?
We just happened to be shopping one day for a homecoming dress, minding our business on a Friday evening, and all of a sudden my daughter came tearing out of the store in tears. And it wasn't the first time, you know, it was the sixth or seventh or eighth time. And this had been kind of happening all summer long. And I just had it. And she was devastated on more times than once. And sadly for us, it involved girls who were both her friends and were Native. And I don't know what was more discouraging, was that they were her friends, they were both Native. But it was devastating.
And Leslie, what kind of tactics did these bullies use?
Well, you know, here's the problem is, you know, we had social media, phones, mobile apps, online computers. But this would all really mostly take place, Snapchat, Instagram, text, email, Facebook, all of the above. And it was relentless. And, you know, it wasn't just one girl. It was a wolf pack of girls.
Wow. And Leslie, I'm wondering how many people right now are hearing your story and are reminded of something that they and their family have had to live through, or maybe relates to something that somebody faced when they were younger. Folks, if there's anything you'd like to share when it comes to bullying, what do you do when you know somebody's life is being affected by it? What about when it's your child? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And Leslie, you took another step. You decided to share your story in a national publication. And tell us a little bit about why you decided to take this approach and some of the things that you shared when you shared your story with Indian Country Today Media Network.
Right. Well, you know, I'm a writer. And so when things really get under my skin and I really see no recourse, or I feel compelled to shed light on something that is almost unsolvable, then that's what I do. I write about it. And, you know, I talked to my daughter and I let her know. I said, listen, I'm going to write about this because it wasn't just my daughter, obviously. I knew that my daughter was not the only one in Indian country or off territories that was going through this kind of thing. But I also knew that other girls on our reservation had gone through this very same thing from these same girls. And I just thought, you know what, this cannot go on any longer. And doggone it, I'm going to do something about it. And so obviously it was very heartfelt and very personal. And it wasn't an indictment, you know, against this particular girl or the girls who were involved. I realized that this was a more endemic problem. And so I wanted to address that. And, you know, ultimately, I really wanted to be able to hopefully have people read it and look in the mirror and take a look at themselves and go, you know, what have I done? I've hurt somebody and it's wrong and it's my own people. And, you know, to try to simply shift the thinking and the behavior. And amazingly, I think we've done that.
Sure. And when you think about that in our communities, folks, what are your thoughts? What does it take to shift behavior so that incidents of bullying, you know, we don't hear about them? And when you think about it and you think of your own community or your child's school, when we say bullying, what comes to mind? Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Are you a parent who is also helping your young person face a bully in school? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And Leslie, after you put this out there, how do you think things have changed or what you brought light to?
Well, let me tell you, it's really been very gratifying. Honestly, I didn't think that, one, we were going to get an apology from the primary girl in question, but we did. And but secondly, we happened to go to an event, I want to say the day or the day after the story went live, and lots of girls and other students, Native and not, and teachers just came up to my daughter and gave her hugs and expressed their support and said they were sorry that this was happening to her and we shouldn't have to put up with it. And they were glad that we were doing something about it.
Wow. And folks, maybe you're somebody who read the article and also want to talk directly with Leslie. You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. 2848. Leslie, we're going to make room for another voice here. Joining us on the road to Montana is Dr. Pearl Yellowman, and she is a consultant in the areas of wellness, tribal leaders mediation, strategic planning, and building cultural competency with organizations. She is Navajo, and it's our pleasure to have Dr. Yellowman on the hour with us. Hello, Dr. Yellowman.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Indeed. And Dr. Yellowman, when you hear stories like Leslie has shared, how common does it sound, and how does it make you feel?
Oh, well, thank you, Leslie, for sharing your story. And like Leslie said, it is devastating. When I was thinking earlier about what bullying is, I was thinking in some of our tribal languages, we don't necessarily have a word for bullying. We have words that come close, or we have actions that may come close to describing bullying. So when we really think about bullying, it's hard to define in a sense. Although our schools and school entities, they work diligently to prevent bullying in the schools, or they have maybe perhaps like curriculum to help and work with students to prevent bullying. But also when we have adult bullying, that's also very difficult to define. But I also think the anti of bullying, what is the anti of bullying? And when you think about it, it's like a loss of empathy. We are lacking empathy. We have lost the ability to support somebody, or we have lost the ability to create a safe environment when there's bullying, or we have lost the ability to understand somebody. As adults, we might have become kind of resistant or resilient to workplace bullying. But when you're in second grade or fourth grade or 8 years old or 9 years old, that's very difficult. That's a different story. And if we have bullying, if we're going to really look at bullying and really understand the statistics, we have violence on our own people. So we have young girls, 8-year-olds, bullying one another. And that's a really tough conversation. It's an important conversation to bring up, and I'm thankful that it was on the show today. So that kind of worries me when we really look at what our communities begin to allow. What does that say about our community when we have our young kids participating in forms of bullying? And like I said, although it's very difficult to define, we still have bullying in the schools, we have bullying in the community, and then we have forms of like cyberbullying, social media bullying. And so there are different forms of bullying that we really have to start to dissect and look at the anatomy of bullying and really start to look at ways to prevent and combat bullying.
Dr. Yellowman, when we think of this, we start putting our own tribal communities into perspective, is there something that changes when we think of our tribal nations? You know, a lot of times when we hear about bullying, you'll hear other parents who are saying, those kids, they did the same thing to my kid. And it's interesting when we get to that point and we hear that others have been bullied. What do we think of that, or how can we deal with that? If it sounds like bullies just take on a new target and it continues, tell me more.
Well, it's interesting, but I think some things that come back to my mind is when you mentioned earlier parenting is such a sensitive topic, and it's an intimate topic because we're talking about inside the home. So it's really difficult to kind of travel into the home, so to speak, to discuss some of these topics But also it's an opportunity to discuss some of our tribal teachings that we have and that we are trying to maintain and preserve. So many of our tribal teachings teach us about, like family, teach us about community and relationships with one another, healthy relationships. We also have wonderful organizations in our tribal communities like the United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization or the Gen I Project. Those organizations help our young people and youth councils. We have youth councils throughout the country, Wind River and White River and Washington State. So we have youth councils emerging, and these are one of the topics that they're addressing because they're trying to teach our young people how to build healthy relationships, coping skills, maybe healthy communication skills. So I think those are opportunities for parents to kind of get involved or maybe grandparents. And it's an opportunity for communities to kind of connect back and activate our cultural teachings. Every community is unique and different. Every tribal community is unique and different. So they have maybe ceremonies or activities that they can do together where they are teaching one another how to build empathy, how to build support for one another. And like I said, because that parenting topic is very sensitive, and sometimes we have elderly grandparents raising young children, that's a very sensitive topic as well to really kind of go into the schools. But also, when you mentioned communities too as well, how do we know when it's not safe? And our young kids should be able to be able, our young children should be able to find safe and identify safe individuals in the community that they can go and talk to. And that's really important. And what would it say to our own community if our young kids feel like they can't go to somebody and talk to?
So we really have to help
our young kids.
We really get to a dangerous space when young people feel that they can't go to somebody or they see, they report incidents of bullying and then nothing happens. Pretty frustrating. Folks, if there's anything you'd like to share, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And when we think of our own tribal communities, our tribal teachings, how do you think bullying lines up with it? What about turning to our culture to face some of it and remind folks of how we connect as communities? Give us a ring. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. Leslie, I wanted to turn to you. Just any more thoughts? Dr. Yellowman is definitely leading us to points of discussion where, we talk about facing this or just how deep it can go. Anything to add, Leslie?
Well, I just wanted to say, achieving a resolution from schools is really, really difficult, and that's precisely why I took the issue on myself and cracked open the lid on it because there was no resolution. And from what I understand, when I was conducting some of the research to write my article, there was a piece that was done some time ago that indicated part of the problem is that, it's really only been relatively recently that bullying policies have been introduced in schools, but sometimes they're really very limited. And frankly, there are virtually no policies in place or even ethics policies for adults in tribal communities. And so I think that is part of the problem. If we could introduce, we could begin the discussion and begin to introduce some of these things as tribal ordinances or tribal policies in the workplace, in the schools, so that these can be resolved. Because frankly, the issue that we dealt with, occurred on the territories and then only trailed their ways to the school campuses. When I met with the principal, I said, hey, look, I understand this is not your problem, but this is a problem that comes to your school. So I think possibly, you know, one of the remedies is that we should and could be working collaboratively, both with tribal communities and with schools themselves, administrators, behavioral health counselors, to begin to address. Frankly, I would like to see one of possible resolution is counseling that is required for the bully. A lot of times, you know, these things erupt because there are situations in the home. And there are root problems, root causes that inherently take place. And I think those need to be examined, explored, and addressed.
And Leslie, you also wrote about having interaction directly with the bully's parents. Anything you want to share there about, you know, sometimes you feel that the parents also need some good conversations?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's difficult. Parents are always going to be defensive about their kids, right? I mean, obviously, I love my child. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to safeguard and protect her. And so clearly other parents are going to feel that way about their children as well. But I think, you know, when somebody calls out your kid and says, hey, look, this is happening, I mean, I don't know how to bring about more open-minded thinking. I think the article did that, and frankly, I think community pressure right here in Cattaraugus brought that about. But thank goodness, you know, there was some clear-headed thinking, and after the article, frankly, caught like wildfire in our community, and people passed it on, and lots of kids came forward, and then parents came forward, and then there was a certain amount of heat on that father who then finally, you know, approached me and said, you know what, let's get the girls together and let's start to do some healing. And I was never so glad then to receive that message.
And is that something you wish would have happened when your child was going through something similar? You can join our conversation 1-800-996-2848. And what do you do when you do, as a parent, reach out to another parent, the parent of a bully, and you get the response of nothing? What do you think? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We are talking about bullying. And what about solutions? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you'd like to share anything about your native teachings addressing bullying, what were you taught about its effects on a person? What about its effects on a community? 1-800-996-2848. What are the forms of bullying that you've seen your child live through? How did you handle it? What was the response? 1-800-996-2848. What about bullying on the internet? Is that something you'd like to talk about? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We have more folks that we're going to be weaving into the hour. And also thinking ahead even more, what about when this trickles into an adult's life? How do you handle it then? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you got time or are close to the computer, can just send us a tweet. Go ahead and do it. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Phone lines are open, though. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to hearing your voice on these Native airwaves. And here's the look at what is coming up tomorrow on our Electronic Talking Circle. Ivory bans across the U.S. put some Alaska Native artists in a difficult position. Creating art from walrus tusks is allowed for Alaska Native artists. But some states are banning all ivory and putting some Native artists' livelihoods at risk. We'll learn more about this on the next Native America Calling.
Hey, ya, 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 hey, ya How about Dr. Piki? Medicare is your prescription for a healthy life. For anyone with Medicare, Part D provides access to affordable prescription drugs. Sign up for or switch your Part D plan during open enrollment from October 15 to December 7. For more information, visit www.medicare.gov. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Doksake.
Support by the very first Indigenous Comic-Con in Albuquerque, New Mexico, November 18th through the 20th, featuring Indigenous creators, illustrators, writers, designers, actors, and producers from the worlds of comic books, games, sci-fi, fantasy, film, TV, and graphic novels. Indigenous Comic-Con seeks to highlight the amazing work and bring understanding about the Indigenous experience to the world of popular culture. Info on Facebook or at IndigenousComicCon.com. Everyone is welcome.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isla de Pueblo. In this hour, we're discussing bullying and bullies and the complications that it causes in our Native nations. Bullying also takes place online, and when it's on the computer, it's often referred to as cyberbullying. And these cyberbullies can be hard to track down because some outlets offer make a person anonymous. And have you or your children ever been the target of cyberbullying? What are the strategies and what would you like to share about dealing with cyberbullies? Join our conversation today. The number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. Also, have you ever changed your behavior because of a bully? And have your children ever been bullied at school or on social media? Tell us how you dealt with it on our toll-free line at 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to our phone lines. We're going to say hello to Hunter in Grand Rapids, Michigan, tuned in online. Hunter, thank you for your call, and what would you like to share?
I'd just like to say, first of all, I appreciate both of the speakers that are presenting on this issue, especially for Indian country. You know, myself working in the social work field and prevention fields in with tribes, I think it's very important, you know, and I would encourage any men that are listening to reach out to our young boys and adolescents who, unfortunately, at a very young age are starting to get in trouble, are at risk, are often incarcerated, probably at accelerated rates than other populations within their native communities. You know, so I think, you know, for us in this part of the country, in Indian country, you know, we kind of refer to our seven grandfather teachings, and which teaches about love and respect and honor, bravery, courage, you know, those kinds of traditional values. But a lot of our young men and boys often don't have, you know, that sort of native role model to connect with and that linkage and mentor with. And so I just want to encourage the power of mentorship, which is also a part of our clan teachings and extended family teachings, and to encourage any of our men to get involved and reach back out to our young boys and you know, teach them some of these, what does it mean to be a warrior? What does it mean to live by honor, you know, to live, you know, with courage?
Sure. And Hunter, there's a lot of wealth that comes when we're reminded of these things. Hunter, before you go, when we think about bullying in our Native nations, do you think it's different when we're talking about males and females, especially young ones? How the type of bullying or why bullying occurs? Do you think there's a difference?
There probably is. But I would just say that probably with marginalized communities, especially oppressed communities, especially in Indian country, when we've continued to kind of deal with some of the remnants of historical trauma, because of that unsettling and because we haven't really recovered from that, what we see is a lot of these behaviors playing out in schools, playing out in the workplace, in families and communities, with our adults. You know, so it's I'd say it's a little bit scary to kind of think about, you know, the lack of resources that we currently have in Indian Country to provide prevention and appropriate mental health services. I mean, typically, you know, our Indian healthcare funding is at only about 40 to 50% the level of need that is needed in Indian Country. So we're kind of, the playing field is a little bit different when it comes to our Native children and young people. So, and then we have a lot of our Native young people that are living in urban areas where there are no cultural programs, where they can't connect. You know, so some of the stuff that we've tried to do is to start mentoring programs between colleges and universities and organizations, you know, with urban tribal communities that may not have any Native American centers or programs, and, you know, do some prevention work and try to build some skills.
Sure, building healthy life ways. Well, Hunter, I do appreciate your call. Is there any contact information you'd like to share about any of the programs you mentioned?
No, not really.
Okay. No problem, Hunter. Thanks for your call there in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Folks, what do you think about some of Hunter's comments about connecting all of this to other things that are going on in our communities? Do you think we have bullies because other issues exist? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Hunter, thank you for your call. Let's take one more. We're going to say hello to Kathy in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. Kathy, thank you for your call. And go ahead, you're on air.
Thank you. There is a Yurok healing ceremony, which happens, it occurs, the ceremony is the person who needs healing helps someone else who needs help. And the only rule during the ceremony is to be true to yourself. So what I imagine is the person begins to feel like they're very comfortable and they like helping another person, and they will sort of rediscover their own natural sense of compassion and empathy.
And that's something that earlier our guest was saying was lacking sometimes when what leads to bullying. Kathy, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us there in Spokane. 1-800-996-2848 is the number for you to share your thoughts to when it comes to bullying, how to face it, how to address it, and how to make sure more children aren't the target of bullies. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's take one more call. We're going to hear from Jim in Newtown, North Dakota, tuned in on KMHA. Jim, thank you for your call, and you're on air.
I just was explaining to the person who actually answered it first time. It was more trouble. It was happening. It was my daughter actually who was being bullied by another girl in her class. And the bad thing about it was is the school that she was going to. She'd tell the teachers that it happened, and because no one saw it, they flat out told her that if you didn't report it, or if no one saw it, then it didn't happen. And it got to the point to where I actually threatened to bring the law in and have that young lady escorted out of the school by the police. And the superintendent and the principal both told me that I could not do that. And I finally just said, all right, whatever. I said, I'm going to look into it. My brother's he's a superintendent of schools, and he's the one who told me that, yes, I could bring the law in and have her taken out. And there wasn't a thing the parents could do about it. And what finally stopped it was, and I hate to say this, but I worked with the young lady who was bullying my daughter. I worked with him at the factory I worked with, and or I worked at, and I finally threatened him, is what finally got it to stop. I told him, I said, I will not lay a hand on your child. I said, but if it happens again, I will knock on your front door, and you and I are going to have more than a few words. And that's when it finally stopped. But
wow.
I didn't want to have to be that guy, but that's what I had to do because, you know.
And Jim, that's really frustrating and alarming too, that it has to go, you know, to this level. And I'm also wondering, you know, if there are parents out there too, who have been frustrated because you took the proper channels and your complaints or your talking about the issue was met with nothing. What happens when we do get to that point? And you know, we definitely don't want this kind of lateral violence in school leading to more violence. What happens when there are no channels to deal with this? You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Jim, thank you for your call in Newtown, North Dakota. And I'm going to bring in another guest here who I do want to address some of the things that Jim brought up. I want to say hello to Yvonne Tiny DeCroy. She's joining us today from Pine Ridge, South Dakota. She's an outreach coordinator for the Sweetgrass Project and CEO for the BEAR Program Prevention and Intervention. She is Oglala Lakota, and it's our pleasure to welcome Tiny back to the hour. Tiny, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a very interesting subject that we're discussing today.
Yes.
Very delicate to some people, to a lot of people.
And very common, and which is a great reason why we're talking about some of this. Tiny, I want to start off with our caller from Newtown and just some of the things he shared, or even, you know, taking
sure.
things into his own hand and confronting a parent. What was going on when you heard this story and this incident? Tiny, your reaction.
Yeah. What was, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. You said the caller from Newtown?
Yes, Jim.
Confronting a parent?
Confronting a parent and just hearing how far the bullying went. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is not something that's rare to me. You know, we've experienced this several times before. And it's sad when a parent has to take it to that level because their level of anger has reached to the point where there's no turning back. And the doctor from Montana stated, you know, our parents are in denial and we'll go to bat for our kids. And so when it comes to modeling our behavior as parents, when our children are bullying, it just goes out the window.
And so what do we do that this doesn't lead to more violence?
You know what? Prevention, education, we talk about that a lot. But it seems like we only get involved when our child or some are, and we don't get involved when somebody else's child is being bullied. Other than the situation from New York where it went to the media and then everybody came up and they apologized and they felt bad. But that's not happening all over. We react. We're not proactive. We're reactive. We react when the incident happens. And there are times when we tend to forget. We tend to forget because it's over with. Gentlemen, you talked about bullying versus teasing. We do a lot of that in our conflict resolutions because what is bullying and what is teasing? And to combat that, we have to have the parents involved in our trainings as well because a lot of them are in denial and they don't want to look at the fact that my child could be the bully. So when we talk about what is bullying and what is teasing, and then you look at administrators, and we always say that administrators aren't doing enough. They're not doing enough. There's so much bullying going on at our school that it's sad that our kids just don't want to go to school. Well, in the nation, look how many, 60,000 plus don't want to go to school every day because kids are, they're being bullied. And they have stomach aches, their head hurts, they have earaches. And they have created their own illness, and it's called a bully illness. And I just don't want to go to school today. But when you go back and you want to, you know, we're to the point where we want to blame everybody else for what's happening. But we all have to come together collectively to see how we can fix it. Administrators here on the Pine Ridge Reservation at one time was being blamed for some suicides. Fingers were pointed because have we lost our children to suicide, to the other world because of bullying? Yes, we have. So when you look at bullying versus teasing, some of our administrators, yes, they do turn the other way. And they say, oh, they're just teasing you. They're just teasing you. That's not really bullying. But you have to identify what is bullying and what is teasing.
And Tiny, how are we going to Tiny, I'm gonna jump combat in. That? Sure, Tiny, I'm going to jump in here because, you know, what do we do? Because, you know, we heard from the parent, Jim, talking about reporting it to the school. And if nobody witnessed it, maybe it didn't happen. And then when we talk about that line between teasing and bullying, a lot of this, you know, some people might say it's hard to prove or people brush off something. And then, you know, bullying leads to something so extreme that a young person takes their life. What do we do to start, you know, thinking about this or putting the importance that we need to when some of these things are just starting so that they don't lead to, you know, worse situations?
I think we need more awareness out there. I mean, we have signs, we have posters in Indian country that talks about, you know, my school is a no-bully school, and you walk into schools and there's the, you know, a no-bully zone. But exactly what are we doing? There's all these wonderful curriculums, and I was just talking about this the other day, that the teachers are getting all this wonderful training. But if you don't utilize what you're being taught, then it's no good. Do you just utilize your knowledge of bullying when a bullying occurs in the classroom? But if you did something every day, twice a day, to remind these kids that it's not allowed. It's not. Is it the law now? Can you break a law if you're caught bullying? Well, in some tribes, there it is a law where it says you can go. You know, they will give you a citation. You have to take your child and go before the court because it's out of hand. So what do? We have to make ourselves more aware. Communities have to be more aware. We have to our outreach has got to be every day in the schools. We have to, because it's happening. It's happening at home. People say, well, it's coming from home. Teachers are saying it's coming from home, and it could be. But where do we draw the line?
And I like that you bring in, you know, taking it to that level where we are involving the community. And maybe even thinking about putting, you know, ordinances or laws on the books. Folks, has your community taken those measures? You can reach out to us. You can always send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And so I think we got a good grasp as to how deep this can go when we talk about young people and the circumstances that it puts us in. What about it moving on into our adult lives? Folks, if there's anything you'd like to share, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we got a gentleman on the line who does want to address that. We have Dr. Gary Namy. He's the director and co-founder of Workplace Bullying Institute. Dr. Namy, thank you for being with us today. And tell us, how does all of this trickle into our adult lives if we don't handle it, if we don't hold people accountable?
Thank you, Tara. I've been fascinated. I've been listening the whole hour to all of you, Leslie, Dr. Pearl, Tiny. I think it's so perfect. Characterization Leslie used about the wolf pack of girls that attacked her daughter is actually the starting place for the adult movement. The school bullying movement began in Norway in the 70s. And in the mid to late 80s in Sweden, the workplace bullying movement began, and it was actually called mobbing, a.k.a. wolf pack, many perpetrators converging on the single lone targeted person, without a doubt. And then the British term is workplace bullying for it, so they sort of grew the schoolyard up into the adult workplace. Now, the carryover from school to work happens for the bullies. But we know that of the adults that are targeted for bullying in the workplace, only 20% of those had been targeted in school. So it's not, there's very little carryover. But the bullies, certainly, if they have not been stopped or addressed, and yeah, it did hurt to hear the one fellow talk about an adult confronting a child to actually get it to stop. That's sad, too. But long story short, we need to have early intervention with the children to prevent it in adulthood. But I have a different take on the school-adult relationship. How in the world are we going to get it to stop in the schools when the adult, when the children see it modeled for them in front of them, where the teachers themselves get bullied, either by another teacher or by principal or by superintendent, as is so common? Because the two industries in America that are rife with bullying are education and healthcare. So, and you've used the term lateral violence, Tara, which I thought was great. That's the nurse's term for it. Here at Workplace Bullying Institute, we define bullying as actually abusive conduct. It is repeated health-harming mistreatment by one or more employees that takes the form of verbal abuse, threats, intimidation, humiliation, or sabotage of somebody's performance. And if you really want the best analogy for what bullying is, whether it's in childhood or in adulthood, it is yet the only form of abuse that is not taboo in America. It is most analogous to domestic violence. So if you are in a culture rife with domestic violence, you will undoubtedly have too much bullying happening. The national statistic, the national prevalence statistic that we have from our last national study is 27% of all adult Americans. So you can, and it's worse in minority groups, Hispanics, African Americans, and Asians. Natives were not, Native Americans were not assessed in our poll, but I would hazard a guess it is much higher than 27% based on what everything I've heard you guys say.
And Dr. Namy, we are getting tight on time here, and I definitely want to leave people thinking about solutions, because I think we've done, a good job at just seeing how out of control this is. Dr. Namy, what do we do to turn things around?
The school is responsible and the employer is responsible. What we never want to have happen is to make the victims responsible for their own fate and say, you are the one who needs to stand up, grow a thicker skin, and get tougher. If they could have, they would have, and there's not usually a weakness. Interestingly, in adulthood, it's a strong person. So we are actually pushing for laws in every state. It's called the Healthy Workplace Bill. We've had it introduced in 30 states. But in America, anything that is perceived as anti-business runs into many, many hurdles. So it's been an uphill battle. Until then, we wait on voluntary employer adoption. But American employers are way behind the rest of the world. We're the only industrialized nation that doesn't have laws, by the way, to address this. So we need laws to compel employers to do what they should do. So it really has to be institutional. The short-term fix is to get coworkers and other kids involved. In other words, bystanders, the witnesses, because they're often paralyzed by fear. We need to help people get over that fear, minimize that fear, don't worry about retaliation, have the schools and the employers promise to keep engaged witnesses who volunteer to help appear, keep them safe from retaliation, and then we could nip this in the bud. But until we feel, and I loved what Dr. Pearl was saying about lost empathy, until we cue our own compassion up and stand next to our friend, I think your values in the Native American community are so much stronger than the general American culture. When you say traditional values, it is community, and that's what we need. You need to infuse those values and trigger them, activate them, and get coworkers to help. I think that while we're waiting on laws, and we're waiting on employers to catch on and school districts to be more responsive, it's in our hands,
sure,
as witnesses.
All right. Thank you for that, Dr. Naimi. And Tanya, I wanted to give you a moment. Any final thoughts? We got about a minute, especially anybody listening right now who's facing a bully. Any thoughts to them?
I you know what? I think that what everybody has said is valid. And we can't stop and we can't turn the other cheek and we can't just wait for it to cure or to heal itself. We have to work together as a community to get our community stronger. And I mentioned earlier the Oglala Sioux Tribe has an ordinance that will be passed. It's called the Anti-Bullying Ordinance. And that means that what was said, it's the school's responsibility. If the child is in the school and the child has been bullied, it's the school's responsibility to help fix this problem. If it's in the community, it's the community's responsibility. So we all have to continue to move forward, but it takes the efforts of everyone. That trust issue and building trust amongst the people is so important on our reservation. And I'd just like to add that.
And Tanya, if anybody wants to follow up with you, what are some good places to find you?
They could come to the Bear Cave, which is in the basement of Billy Mills Hall. They can phone me at 605-454-0518, or they can Facebook me. And we can, because we have our Bear program, they do training. And it's kids, they're survivors of bullying. We had one young person who attempted suicide 12 times because she was bullied. And she's alive today, and she's out there and telling her powerful story. So the Bear program, we go out and we do a lot of intervention, and we do a lot of postvention with our kids.
And we've heard a lot of the great work you're doing. Our thoughts out to the group. And folks, thank you for giving us your ears today. And if there's anything more you'd like to share, you can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. That's going to do it for our program today. Thanks again to our guests, Leslie Logan, Dr. Pearl Yellowman, Yvonne Tiny DeCroy, and also Dr. Gary Naimi. Join us again tomorrow as we talk about the ban on ivory sales and what it means for some Alaska Native artists. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. Roman Garcia engineered today's show. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. It's a pleasure to be on air with you, and we will look forward to hearing from you again tomorrow. Visit us online, nativeamericacalling.com.
Support for this program provided by the University of Tulsa College of Law, offering a 100% online master's degree program in Indian law. This degree can move your career forward and help you work effectively in Indian country. Deadline for spring application is December 1st. Info at law.utulsa.edu/MJIL. As an American Indian or Alaska Native, there is one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native businesses. Exercise your right to vote for the candidates of your choice on November 8th. Your vote on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Vote for our people, our land, and our future. Know your rights and go to NativeAmericaCalling.com for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.